space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Emma Gerd, Dragon. Every time I see the episode title for this, I always think, Emma Gerd. It's
the name. But it's not, it's Erica.
Yeah, I know, Erica. But it looks like Emma Gerd to me.
You don't want to upset the brain by mispronouncing the names for the Holy Crusades.
Fuck that. Teenage web warriors are more scary than anything the brain can throw at me.
Very true. Piss them off. Oh, and David Williams is joining us. Erigies. Yeah. No, we've not been Erigid. Don't be telling people we've got an Erigid. We don't.
Yeah, geez, yeah.
We don't want any of that.
You piss off the Swifties.
But yeah, we're here to talk about Erigia. Which is the latest episode of Discovery. Before we do that, though, we have some Trek news, Elliot.
Yeah. It's not really so much Trek news, it's more a Trek warning. Paramount have announced that they're doing some early screenings of the final episode of Discovery in America day early. So it's a warning to... the final episode is due out on May the 30th, and they decided that they're going to show it in cinemas on May the 29th. So it's more a warning for the day before the final episode. Try and avoid your social medias for spoilers, because you know some asshole is going to spoil it if you're not careful.
More than likely.
So I just wanted to let people know that as a bit of a warning to them.
Yeah, just be on the ball a little bit about how we're off to UK Games Expo as well. So we'll have to watch it when we get there.
I'll remember my Fire TV stick so we can
there
watch
we
it.
Go. That'll do it.
Obviously, not your fault, Elliot, but I was hoping some cheerier Trek news. I was hoping it was set release from Strange New Worlds. Pike's hair is now interfering with ceiling fans. It's got that big now. You know, it's like something really cool. Yeah.
I think we did the big world premiere Universal exclusive last week. So this is just more a bit of a warning. But in case anyone did miss our Universal exclusive, we are playing on the stage.
Oh, no, get the banner back up. Jesus, the banner. There you go, sorry.
Yeah, we will be at Destination Trek doing When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies.
Yeah, our world famous show.
Yeah.
It's touring very slowly, but you know.
Very close.
But if you want to book us, we will be very fast to get there.
Yes,
we will. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You can check with both people who've booked us. We were there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We weren't holding you up.
At least this time we have been paid, sort of.
Is there maybe a bag of crisps in the green room? That's not a deal breaker. Just we're wondering. No,
okay, no that's anyway. It. We don't insist on removing the colours of M&M's or anything like that. But
Jesus Christ, if there was M&M's, we would just faint at the glory.
We would be happy with them. Anyway, let's talk about Erica then. So. Yeah, I feel like this is a major return to form after last week. I was very, very down on last week, whereas this one I thought was genuinely exciting. Yeah, but only because it wasn't an awful episode.
It was just fairly crap. Yeah,
I know we're kind of grading on a scale with Discovery, but let's hold it to something of a standard.
I will give you this as an unrunning story. This episode, if it was like, for instance, Deep Space Nine, one of our kind of favorites, I would put this in there as a good episode. Like, not great episode, but good, take off the Discovery scale and this would still score highly, I think.
Okay? Yeah, I think it was genuinely well put together, exciting, moved the story forward, lots of tension, good character work.
We're going to find out. it's nice to be finding out little bits about the brewing. We're still not, like, let's be honest, there's only three episodes left of Discovery, so there's no way we're getting enough to build up enough of a story of the brain, really. But at least we are getting some more about the culture.
Yeah, we've got more, and we've got more about them than we got in Deep Space Nine, where they were largely used as a plot device at the end of the Dominion War, which was fine, and it worked. But yeah, we've got, there's a bit more flavour to them now.
And it's kind of funny because, like, they had in Picard, obviously through the Changelings, the Dominion War was featured quite a lot, as it is in Discovery's last season. It's like, yeah, it's no objection. It just seems you could pull from some other stuff. I'm just saying, like, I mean, they've used it well, so I don't mind, but
I think it's just nice. DS9's getting some love. It's always the one that seems to get ignored.
It's just weird. It happens at the same time.
I think wildly now amongst the fandom, if you look back as, shall we call the TNG era, the Silver Age?
Yeah, the,
now,
yeah.
Let's do the comic references, so let's call that the Silver Age, because it was second time around. And I think DS9 now, when people look back, is actually the most popular when you start asking Trek fans, which do you remember most fondly? And it's like, at the time, everyone, when it was out, everyone was TNG. But now when people go back, it's, oh, yeah, DS9, the story.
It's
the one more and more people have discovered.
It's held critically in the highest regard, I think, of the...
I don't think it's any wonder that's the one that's been pulled on.
But it's funny. I feel like it's like, it's almost like we've started to grade DS or TNG a bit more kind of like, fairly to what it was. It's like, it wasn't the best, like, it had some episodes which were clunkers, but because it brought it back, that'll always have a special heart place in a lot of hearts. And I think we've maintained that, but realized maybe Deep Space Nine was more consistent. I think that's
fair.
I think there's something about TNG which will always pull a different heart.
Absolutely.
The reality of TNG was, when TNG first came onto TV, it was sort of at the start of the wave of sci-fi hitting the TV screens in the 80s. There'd been a massive lull, so it was always going to be really big because it didn't have loads of competition. By the time we came around to DS9, there was a lot of other sci-fi shows had sort of started on the coattails of TNG. So it had that more competition, and it had to be better to keep viewers.
Yeah.
Like, it's often said, like we've said it ourselves, if TNG was released nowadays on its first season, it had been cancelled.
Yeah. A lot of shows, you could say that, but like there's so many shows which we were so beloved now. But the first series, like, you know, now you do not get a second chance. Like it used to be, you got a second chance almost automatically.
You expected it, but that you expected the first season or maybe even the first couple of seasons to be clunky, which ties into what David's saying, start DS9 at season three. I disagree. I think there's enough.
I'm going to say this, David. If you go back and listen to our Dominion War series, that I know you were there for the final episode that we did, but we had to start way back in season one of DS9.
We did.
Was it second, third episode?
Yeah, we started with Captive Pursuit,
Yeah, so you have to start in season one to get the entire story arc. You need to watch Emissary, which we haven't covered yet.
No,
because that's
true.
That throws up like to the very ending of DS9. So these episodes you need to watch in DS9 early on.
I
agree that DS9 did get much better from season three.
It did.
But I'll throw in as well, I watched the entire thing back fairly recently, and the first two series are actually a lot better than I remembered. Like, there's a lot better hit rate, a lot more fun episode. Like, Tosk, I think, is an amazing episode. That's really fun. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree.
Really fun episode. Like, there's so many fun standalone episodes. It's just not what it became, but it's still really good.
I agree.
And a better hit rate than early TNG, to our point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, Discovery then. So, Erica, we knew last time that they'd caught Mull and Locke. Now we found out how, like, they'd done this sort of gambit, really, where they're like, we're going to send out the smugglers, not smugglers, what are they called? Yeah. Courier signal. Where, and hopefully a courier will pick us up, but no.
Had they escaped in a photon torpedo that they'd modified from the accident?
No, it was an escape shuttle or something.
This is the only problem I have with this episode, really. It's like, why don't we see that? Like, it's like anything which happens outside of Discovery, we're not allowed to see. And so I think it would be nice to have seen a little capture bit with them.
We didn't see it.
We saw them escape, but I think what Squeeze's saying is, you know, it'd be nice to see the starship catching up with them and actually...
Yeah, that's why
we did.
Actually, yeah. No, you see it in space, but you don't see...
We see the pod that they're in, and we can hear the message, and then that big flat starship with the silly...
Yeah, I was not impressed with that.
It just seemed very kind of like glossed over. I don't know. I'm sorry.
It was very glossed over.
We could have had a
better way of putting it. So you were right.
And to be fair, I have used it in the thumbnail for this week's episode.
I mean, first time I watched it, I genuinely didn't realise they were getting captured. It just seemed so... Yeah. It seemed something enough. Sorry, what I mean is it would be nice to have seen a big thing around it.
Yeah.
You know? A big capture for someone who's going to be vital to the thing.
There's a lot to get through in this episode.
I think it's that they've got off in an escape pod, so they've got initial velocity to get away, but then it's no further fuel, so it's just stuck. They're just stuck in
space. Yeah, it's just kind of...
I'll also throw in, there was something about this shot, and I've realised Discovery does this more than I've kind of noticed watching them back. Like, I did like there was a sort of starkness to that shot. Like, the there was something sort of just felt a little cold to me in that opening shot.
Yeah, I think the visuals are very cold, the space visuals in Discovery.
In this case, I really liked it, though. It sort of seemed really appropriate. You know, I like the idea. It's like, if you're a courier out on your own, you are at so much risk all the time. Like, when you get just a message in the coldness of space, you've just got to trust there's someone friendly at the other end of it and take whatever precautions you can. I just thought something seemed very striking about that.
It fit like, with the
even
theme,
though I wanted more
way.
Drama to it.
And then we get reintroduced to everybody's favourite character, Commander Nan. And I'm being slightly sarcastic, but at least she gets to pop up again in the final season.
Yeah, she's popped up, and I thought she was quite good in season two. I liked her in season two Discovery. I thought she was a really good character.
I'll give her that she's great when they give her something to do, but like a lot of the kind of ancillary characters, she just doesn't get like in here. She probably got more than she like, or as much as she got in season two. She was great, but I feel like she was sometimes.
Yeah.
They did do an episode though, didn't they?
They did. It was the one where they wrote her out. Yeah.
Like they do with all of them.
Which is, what they did with Arium as well.
Yeah, watching the Arium one back is the most annoying because they set up, just as they're killing her, some really interesting story. Like, if we'd got that, oh my God, that death would have been so impactful, and it would have been so interesting, and there was so much to unpick about it. And they only show us just as she's dying. But, I think she's in the most extreme cases because it's such an interesting kind of thing we don't see.
This is true. I mean, look, this is Discovery. We're not here to get to know our characters. Let's get these silly ideas out of our heads, unless it's Michael.
Yeah. And Rayner, which I'm all for.
Rayner's excellent. Yeah, and he gets some really good stuff this episode. So the setup is that Locke is still injured from his wounds, and they're going to need to get some old Breen tech, and they give it some sort of technobabble about,
it's a Breen unit.
Yeah, I can redo this and repurpose it and blah, 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 blah.
I was thinking about this, and last week we sort of established that they're not changelings, but they exist in a solid and a liquid state. And I wonder if the freezer thing is to freeze them so that everything can stay stable. So
maybe, yeah.
It repairs itself in that.
It could
be. That's why they have the freezing units. And
it could well be.
Yeah.
But the Breen are coming, and we get a nice little scene with Admiral Silver Daddy Bear, basically, like,
whoop, whoop.
beaming on and saying, no, you need to take them and run and that'll make it better. But they decide, no, we're going to stay and we're going to face them out.
Can I also give a shout out to something I've realized in this episode again, because there was some really interesting. I like the fact this episode breathed a bit with the character performances, and there was a wonderful bit with him. Like, it just, I kind of like noticed there's a pattern with him, which is really good of him. Like, he's going, right, we're going to do this. When someone else has got an idea, and I know it's always Michael's idea, we go with, we've established this, but he, it seems to be a character trait of his to have the patience of when someone says something, he isn't strict. He listens, he changes course accordingly. He goes, well, what should we do then? Oh, that's a great idea. Like, even when he was talking to the woman from the Orion Syndicate and they talking about the shit apples, you know, it's like there was something just so measured, and it's like he was listening and react, like, you know, more so than any other character.
He's reacting to a situation developing.
Yeah, he's really good at that.
Which is why he's a good admiral.
He's Admiral Silver Daddy Bear.
And to be fair, it was a silly idea to just run away. Like, I was worried for a minute that Michael might say, well, how about we jump him 900 years into the future? That'll keep him out of the way.
Or into the past.
Now, I wonder if this is something that actually quite annoys me, that they listen to Michael's opinion on these species, because where she's from, she's never met the Breen.
No, very true.
And all that. And yet she's suddenly, every time they're in this situation, it's like she's got the knowledge of how you should act with these species, and that doesn't make sense to me. It is quite jarring that she seems to know all this. It's like, how? Like, you know that there's lots of files you can read, but everyone has access to them. But these are people who live in this time, who know 900 years of history, who know these different species that hadn't been discovered when
discovered. I like it.
Yeah,
wait for the pun.
where you're from, and yet you're acting like you're the authority, and I don't agree with it. And I think it's really bad writing.
It
consistently
is.
From Discovery with this, that they've wanted to shoehorn Michael has to be the main character, and they've done it too much, and it's at all costs of sensible storytelling.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense when it's things that she would have no reason to know. And it's more interesting for a viewer if we have to find it out rather than Michael just knowing everything.
Yes.
Like, the stuff we do get later with Raina, where she talks to him, is great. And we get background for Raina, and we get background on the Breen.
And we get out of the act when they take subjugate a planet.
But this early stuff where she's just like, oh, yeah, I know how to deal with the Breen. Like, well, how?
This is why I'm thankful they finally got someone on the ship who was actually from that time. It was ridiculous when they went to the future and they're going, basically they go, well, like, you're years out of date. There's no way you can. And they go, yes, but we're going to anyway. And they go, well, okay then. Okay. And everyone bows down to them, as opposed to sending out people from the time.
Like, technically, Adira is from that time.
Okay.
But so Adira's not. Wasn't Starfleet, they were part of the Earth.
And a junior member of the crew as well, an ensign. Like, whereas, like, when they were saying, it's like, no, you don't get to just take our whole crew off the ship. Fair enough, not take your whole, like, but here are some advisors. Here's some people who
know what people who actually, they should have given her a first officer from that century right from the jump. And, like, the dynamic with Raina is great.
I didn't, but that's a really nice touch.
Good shout out. So yeah, David says that the author of the Beta Z paper was called Marina. So
can we make David our technical advisor?
There we go. Yeah, David can give
that's
us
his rank.
All the trivia. So they decide to stay. I mean, yeah, silly idea. Let's jump away. But then we get the briefing, and this is where Raina's doing his kind of angry, aggressive thing, specifically towards the Breen. And he throws out loads of stuff in here. Like, he does a callback to the Romulan saying, never turn your back on a Breen, which is from DS9. And he also recommends, well, let's make it look like we're really well armed by using Duranium shadows and blah, blah, blah. And
which is DS9.
That's from the pilot episode of Deep Space Nine. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of DS9 love going on.
Oh, that makes sense. I thought it was weird when he goes, "Decot, there's your wormhole." I wondered why he said that. Now
exactly,
I
that's it. Yeah, just a bit too much.
That's going to be next week when we get to the Badlands.
Yes. Well, I mean, what I really loved as well was like, it's kind of weird because like you put the nail on the head of something I was thinking, Jim. Is like because I was thinking it's like there's just. Like, it's not the words he's saying, because I was thinking it's like, wow, he's really delivering some vile stuff. But like you say, it's actually gleaned from other episodes. Mm. From Star Trek. But the way he delivers it, it sounds so fucking racist. It's like, but it felt kind of a brave choice to have the, you know, our first officer, which we're just learning to love, like have him be so vile with kind of the, it was really spitting it out. And I really enjoyed it. It was like very brave. And then they won around.
It's very Kirk from Undiscovered Country.
Yes.
Let them die.
But even worse, he even sounds more vitriolic somehow. Like, you know, Shannon like just sounds like a grieving father somehow.
We do find out that he has got very good reason for this.
Of course.
Yeah. But I was going to say there's shades of, like, Kira a little bit here, and even more so when we start to find out his backstory later in the episode.
Because we all know, like, Star Trek's great at kind of redeeming people and showing people who are kind of, like, obviously purely good. But to show someone who kind of, like, appears in this episode to start from a place of pretty much outright racism and then giving us the reasons and then having him kind of, like, learning is kind of, I think, really good. It's like, it's almost like they don't leave anyone behind. They want to try and get everyone around the table, even the people who we might see as kind of, like, unredeemable. I like that about Star Trek. It's always unredeemable.
He proves pivotal to this episode, largely through his racism towards the Breen. But you know, if it, you gotta make these things work for you.
Can I just say that in no way do we advocate racism?
No.
Sorry, we don't. Oh, sorry, I'm going to have to change the rest of my comments for this. No, of course I don't.
Not even space racism towards the Breen.
Space magic, not space racism. It's going to be
the only time we've ever seen the Breen, they've been baddies. So it does make you wonder.
Yeah, we could be like, and we've got to go for xenophobia.
Yeah, it'd be xenophobia, yeah.
Yeah, I just like the idea, like, yeah, space magic before space racism could be the make love, not war.
Exactly.
Of free Trek.
So, yeah, Michael basically works out that Locke is really important. And we kind of knew this because we knew his uncle was the Primarch, but we didn't really know how it was all going to work.
Well, it's when they send the Dreadnought, like, their biggest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad.
There.
And we find out throughout this episode that it's all to do with how they can ascend to the throne effectively. Because Locke's actually got the bloodline of the Emperor, so the Primarch wouldn't have a claim without him. So he's just become like a bargaining chip within all the Breen infighting. He doesn't want it, but all these Primarchs do. And he legitimizes their claims.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works. Like, wouldn't he become the Emperor?
I didn't quite get it. So I was trying to work it out since his uncle. And I thought, well, maybe
he makes him a Grand Vizier. Because we all know the Grand Vizers are always the evil actual rulers, but power behind the throne.
It could be his uncle.
We've all seen Aladdin.
True.
What?
It could be his uncle by marriage, and so the uncle isn't part of the bloodline.
Yeah.
But he is his uncle. So maybe he was married to Lack's aunt, who is part of the bloodline, and then she's died. He feels he deserves it because he was married to someone who would have ascended to the throne. That isn't how it works with Breen, I don't know.
The way I'm going to piece it together is, I think, because later on he talks about, well, if I can't use him in life, I'll use him in death, because he talks about if he dies. So I think that his plan is to get him on the throne, basically, and then Like, I don't think he cares if that guy. I think he wants them alive to take over.
That's why I'm feeling like more like a Grand Vizier role in Tav.
Yeah, to later on.
So I assume like Green royalty, however it works, their hierarchy, is you have a token emperor, and you have to have a legitimate claim to be with that emperor, and then you're the actual government.
But you're the one pulling all the strings.
Is probably a bit like how we've got what are we classed as?
We're a constitutional monarchy.
So
they don't do anything.
We have a government that makes all the laws, and the king or queen, king as it is at the moment, sort of goes, yes, I agree with that. I give you permission to run my government. That's the deal that's been done, so that the king, our royal family, can continue pretending that they rule something when they actually rule nothing.
Or even a president with a prime minister, as in some countries.
Yeah. So
maybe some comrades have installed someone as the prime minister.
Yeah.
Just answering to the president. Yeah, countries.
Particularly. You've probably got to have the emperor with the government.
Maybe so. I mean, whatever it is, we've got to roll with it and accept that the need lack.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in with two things, though? Like, and they're both actually things that we've called out in the past, just like to, you know, and it's good when we get it right. We were talking about if lock and key were going to be so central, then we'd have to have a better reason. Like, and it looked like it was just going to be book and that kind of relationship, but I'm glad they've made it. Like, where they've made mistakes in the past, they haven't here, which is really nice to see.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, we mentioned the uniforms. And now we know two things about the uniform. They look great, but they're probably not as durable with that many Primarchs.
Oh, very good. Oh. Very good.
Come on. It was right there. I wasn't going to make that joke.
I mean, I have to say, I didn't go straight to it, but I'm glad you found it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lack is saying, oh, there's things worse than death. And this is where we find out, basically they're going to keep him alive and have him effectively as a puppet while this other guy rules, and that's why he wants to get out of it.
Yeah, meanwhile, which is why I think it's probably a bit like a constitutional monarchy. You'll have to sit at state dinners, you'll have to have nice meals, you'll have to live in a nice palace, you'll have your queen that, you'll have to have loads of kids. You'll have to go on visits. You'll have to shake loads of hands, but you won't be allowed to actually make any rules.
And the second you disagree with me, you're dead.
That certainly seems to be what the uncle's plan is. Whether that's normally how it works, I don't know.
Yeah, meanwhile, I like it.
Meanwhile, we're sort of nudging along the looking for the next clue. And I actually enjoy all this stuff in this episode. It doesn't feel sort of shoehorned in. And
the end feels a bit like, you know, the second that Book wants to get away, he's like, okay, chucks his coat down.
I quite enjoyed that. It is amusing. Yeah, it's convenient.
Well, they spend the whole episode trying to figure it out, and then suddenly, because he kind of needs to for the plot, it's like, here it is. I don't know.
Yeah, but basically, Stamets didn't do much.
Thinks of the Beta Z thing. He thinks of the emotional link as opposed to Book.
Yeah.
That's the only bit I would have changed, really. I would have had anyone going, wait a minute, it's an emotional link. Oh, you know, Stamets hands it to him for the first time, and he goes, Jesus Christ. Like, he gets the...
Yeah. But yeah, I do like,
it would have felt a little less convenient. So that's it. It's a small bugbear, but it's like,
I do like how they position it as, no, this even though we've got this impending threat of the brain, solving this is really, really important. And they do take the time to explain that, so it doesn't look like, well, what are these doing messing about when we've got a war potentially breaking out? It's like, no. That is going to be incredibly important. And I like the way they justify it. And I like the funny turn it takes with Reno, where they're like, oh, it's an antique book thing, and she's got that on her CV.
Now, I really love Reno. I think she's a great character. But again, you're looking for something that was created 100 years after Reno left to go to the future. So why is she going to be an expert on finding it? Yeah, and it's like, yeah, 900 years ago, I knew these people who looked for ancient artifacts and stuff, but that was 900 years ago, and it was 100 years after I left that this thing happened. So it's all
Can I give them this? Elliot, the only thing I will give them is her being 100 years away from when it happened, even though it happened in her future, it's close to the time than they are in this time. And so also, maybe it could be in this one instance seen as like she's got close ones to that time.
And I also think that it's implied that the manuscript is older than that. So the manuscript would have existed when Reno was around. But I do like the twist on it that she goes, oh, well, I padded my CV out. You know, I'm not really an expert at all. And that's very in character, but it's also very relatable. Like, you know, people do put things on the CV that they may not have done.
Also, it's very nice that actually, I quite like the fact they pulled the word CV with like curriculum vitae, which they never do in America.
Yeah.
Kind of nice for us. But it was the bit where, when Adira goes, you got a bad bit, not like that. She goes, yeah, like that. Like, I just that amusement.
Oh,
I love Reno for just little shit like that. She's just,
I did like when she was talking about her past jobs, and she goes, oh, in the time I was a bartender, and I'm doing a stint at this bar to keep my hand up in, and I'm doing the Seven of Limes, and
Seven of Limes was nice.
To sell White Russian, and
that's really good fun.
Can we also, before we get to,
go on.
Sorry, if you got any more on that same bit?
No,
just because we also have, to your point before that, we get Tilly stopped to work on this, great, and it shows how much he cares about the Academy students, because like she's very quick to go, yeah, okay, fine. but also you get another one of these moments, and I'm not sure where in the chronology of this episode happens, but another one of these moments where it's like she goes, hey, by the way, you're really great at your job. Oh wow, thanks, teach. It's like, all right, I mean, like Rayna kind of already did that last week, but it's like
yeah, but we need like, to establish.
It feels very forced, the teachable moments. Yeah. They're not giving her teachable moments that need to be her teaching, and also there's nothing she's learning to make her then a better teacher. She's just magically being a better teacher here as opposed to there. I want a reason why she's grown to be better. And they don't seem to be
They give a sort of excuse why, because she's off to go get the students from the Starbase and take them back to Earth to be safer. And there's a bullshit excuse given that, the brain attacked Earth last time, so the shields on the Starbase will protect them. I'll leave them there then, which I didn't think was a really good reason. And I thought it was very much, oh yeah, fine then, I'll just leave them there. It didn't seem to hold.
Yeah, it was paying lip service to it, but not really doing a lot, was it?
I just feel like at the end of this series they're just going to say it's like, and no, I'm a better teacher. It's like, well, what actually in this journey made you a better teacher, as opposed to just having moments where you just are naturally a good teacher? Like, where is
she's learning not to fill people's bowls up with water when that means they'll be executed?
Yeah, that's
which
it.
Is, you know, I've done teacher training and I know that is one of the first things that they teach you.
You don't give your students water ever.
No, yeah. You don't give them water when it will lead to them being sacrificed. And it's the key to teaching, and I'll give this out for free. I mean, I could put this in a book. But the key to teaching is knowing when to give water when someone's thirsty and when not to give water when it will cause them to be sacrificed. And it's getting that balance. Like a few people who were on my teacher training course dropped out because they just couldn't square that circle. Yeah.
Well, and I believe really the nice second lesson, And just the second lesson I believe is if someone's doing something well already naturally, you just go, yeah, good job. And you've learned something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tilly,
I think this is real nice from David. You notice the ships when they flew in to save the
I know Paul Mitchell. I was waiting for the USS Webb to be alongside. It now makes more right sense.
Yeah. David's pointing out that was a nod to the actor Kenneth Mitchell, who played various characters and recently died.
It is told us who.
And my thought was it was a reference to Shard. He played Colshard, Tenevic, and Aurelio.
And in Lower Decks.
And my first thought was, is that of the name of the ship after Gary Mitchell? That seems a bit weird, considering that he became a god and tried to kill Captain Kirk. But, you know, maybe.
But I like that against people if they're being controlled by a god. Like, that's not an animal. Like, they always
I do like that in Star Trek. I do like, not just Star Trek, but other shows that do the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where people have been part of the family of shows. When something happens, they do commemorate.
Yeah, it's nice.
And I'm waiting for the if they can just have the USS Mitchell being caught by the, is it the Tholians? Like, so you can have Mitchell in Webb.
Mitchell in Webb. Yeah, that'd be good.
Just one for us Brits. Like, and I believe it's actually done quite well in America, that show. But anyway.
So something else that they find out then, and this is all set up for next week, but I like this idea, and if they pull it off, I think it could be great. The idea that there's this eternal gallery, this spaceship that wanders the galaxy that has all these old documents and everything. Yeah. And I love the idea that it's to preserve these old books and it keeps them all safe and it's on the move. But
isn't it lucky that this old gallery was launched when Reno was about in the 22nd century?
It's lucky.
And it's 900 years, and it only appears every 50 years, and they can track it at where it's been.
It moves every 50 years. It stays in places for 50 years. Why it would choose the Badlands, I don't know, but
I guess to be hidden. And also, we know that place, so we better reference it.
You might get yoinked away by the caretaker if you're hanging about there too long.
But I thought it's like it was just, it was very similar to the seed bank idea they had earlier on as well.
I've got a feeling, because if this was launched in Reno's time, because they do say it's like 900 years to contract it, and they've got it's 18 previous points they've been able to reference, so they've extrapolated its journey, goes to Badlands. I assume it's on a random, like, we've got to 10 degrees this way, 10 degrees that way, fire thrusters, go, stop. And that's how it worked out, because in Reno's time, they wouldn't have known where the Badlands was.
Well, I mean, did you say what? Sorry, Jim, I think you asked something before I said.
No, carry on.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say with the, it just reminded me of, I think it was season 3 when they got to the future first and there was the seed ship, which same thing. They just launched that in their time and magically it was still happening. It's like, what, do none of these things get derailed at any point during that time?
Yeah,
obviously not. I mean, it's not like there's been a time war and a burn and, you know, all the rest of it.
Yeah, and anything which is that kind of just like wonderfully hippie, like in nature of being for the community, like, yeah, it seems like something which would be hard to protect
I like it, it feels very original series.
It feels very Star Trek does this, because we used to see it in like the original series and TNG times, where they'd come across a ship that was out on a journey that was doing this sort of thing from another civilization, and they'd just let it carry on its way.
That's what I was saying, Jody, book arc. Yeah, I was thinking it was just like the mobile libraries you see around here. Felt like that was a special idea.
Yeah, but it seems like you've got to already have a library card to be able to open up different things.
If we're playing on the puns, then it's the only book arc this season anybody's interested in, because book's actual arc has not been...
Burn!
It was quicker than the burn we got in the third series.
But, so we get Rayna's backstory then. We find out it's very reminiscent of the Cardassians and Bajor.
I think more violent, actually.
It does sound it, yes. They've basically gone in and murdered all his family and everything. Yeah. And gives Michael the idea we'll play these Primarchs off each other. And so effectively, the Federation is just completely bluffing here. They're like, well, you know, we could sell them to this other Primarch. And they're taking a big risk here that the Breen won't actually talk to each other, which I presume you can infer if they're all at war with each other.
Apparently, there was a suggestion at one stage they were going to bring in the Orions into this. I don't know if you heard about this. Apparently, they were going to be working with the Primarchs. It was going to be a Primarch chain. I'm going to do as many of these as I can. I don't care.
No, I can't see the Primarchs talking to each other, because even if he messaged her and went, if you just put a bid in.
Yeah, he wouldn't believe her if she said no.
If you just put a bid in for my nephew to outbid me, he's not going to believe her. And if they are bluffing, it's just they told her that I know where my nephew is and they'll take a bid off you.
True, yeah.
But can we just say, I mean, I know we kind of mentioned previous week, but I just love the fact that Rayna is grounding Michael so much better. Like, I love actually Michael's... I've never had a problem with Michael's natural empathy and her want to bring emotion into the solution. It's just the fact that it was always emotion uncut with any kind of reality for the situation. Rayna brings that, and it's like he's so grounding to the series. It's so much more enjoyable, and I like Michael better with him there. Not to take anything away from her. I just feel like it's like you need a counterpoint to that, and it's just great.
It's good.
Yeah.
And it works really well in that scene. It's like when the bluff sort of starts falling apart, Rayna comes in to reinforce it with all these details. Yeah. You know, this is how I know her, and she did this, and it was that battle, and she called her ship this. That delivers the sort of verisimilitude to it that is enough to sell the Breen on, or maybe they're actually telling the truth now.
You're not just drawing a name, you're giving details about her.
Yeah. And then this is the bit where I almost sort of went, this episode, because you get Locke going, right, Mal, I'll let you escape. And I was just like, oh, no, don't let her escape. And it wasn't because I don't like Maul and I don't want her to escape. It was because I was like, I really don't want this episode to end with another I'll get you next time gadget.
Yes.
And I was just like, please don't do that again. Like, I know it makes sense for the characters to want to do that, but we've only just caught them. Can we not do that? And they don't, the way it turns out. Instead, we get a pretty cool fight with Nan and Mal.
At one point in this, when she shoots Culber, I thought my prediction that I put in last week, where Stamets was off to die, I'd got the wrong way around. And for a second, I thought Phaser wasn't on stun and she was just shooting.
That would have been
so annoying if they killed off either Colbert or him again.
That would have been a twist.
Stamets is off today, and that's how we have to get Colbert to continue in Academy.
Maybe.
If they die off any more turns, forget the Primarch, they're going to need a returns desk.
Need a what?
Returns desk.
Fair enough. Very good. And then, I do like how it ratchets up, rather, the tension. Because Mol escaping, it's like, no, because if she gets away, then the plan might fall apart. And then you get the Brain going, well, if he dies, then it's definitely going to be war. And yeah. I just love how it just layers all this tension on top of it.
And I'd actually love to keep Narn on board, just because I did love the thing of, in the same way that I think Rayna is grounding Burnham, I think she sort of grounded Book, because Book is given so much latitude no matter what he's done. And don't get me wrong, I get it, he's on a mission redemption, that's great, but actually having him stopped every now and then to go, no, you can't just go in there, Willie.
I like what she said, like, first time, and he goes, and she's stopping him, and he's going, well, I'm fine. And that is that, no, last time I saw you, you were firing four ton torpedoes on Discovery, you were doing this, you were doing that, you were this act of terrorism. No, I don't trust you. So I don't care if you're trying to redeem yourself. I don't trust you.
Yeah, you're right.
It feels like up until this point, the only learning that Michael or Bookwhite, to a larger extent, are allowed to do is by them just deciding that they're going to do something different. Yeah. Now this feels like they're learning from other people, which is what you do. And it's more Star Trek idea to learn from others, as opposed to just going, well, I've just decided I'm going to do it this way as opposed to that. Now it's like, it feels like she's finally learning the lessons, or maturing to learn the lessons that she didn't in the Klingon War, like what started the Klingon War. Yeah. I still think it's a bit overplayed when she started it, because what else were you going to do in that situation? What, let the Klingon kill you? But anyway, still, there was some arrogance there, which has lost, and you get to see her making different choices, and it's just so much more interesting when it's played up against someone else who's actually a point of resistance for them.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, you're right. I've not realised, but yeah, there is a parallel between Narn and Book and Rayna and Michael, and I do like that a lot.
We've got
Narn stays on board.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be great. David's put, did you catch a bait story? They mentioned Dr. Marina Garrix was one of the six scientists that the Federation recruited to investigate Magenta's library card for the next clue.
We did know it was Dr. Marina, because David Williams told us about 40 minutes ago.
I think that was called out in the episode, wasn't it? Sorry, it was specifically one of the six scientists, because I think we're onto this thing now where each of the scientists designed one of the clues. That leads us into nicely talking about the bit where Book, and like you say, it is very great. Book's like, I want to go. Stamets is like, we need to solve this mystery. He's like, all right, I'll solve the mystery for you. There we go, I've done it. Now I can go. And in a way, that's quite funny. I don't know if it was meant like that.
It was very false that, like, I think the time of this episode is, this episode only takes part over, or from when they get to, when the Brain arrive, there's only 2 or 3 hours.
Is the
time scale. Yeah. So Book has not actually been working on this for a long time with Stamets.
No, it's almost real time.
It is almost shoe-on, though, isn't it? Like, oh, let me go. No, not to resolve this. I've got an idea. It's Betazoid. What if it's telepathic? Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Solved.
Well, again, if you just had it instead, like Stamets goes, look, just have a look at it. Try and think some more. And it lands in his hand, and that's what triggers it.
Yeah, you could have done something
that.
Like
would be
that.
Less convenient. Like, it's a bit convenient, but it's less so than him going, like, well, actually, all these other hours of thinking of it, I didn't think of anything, but right now it just came to me.
And the other thing as well is, and I know this is because, you know, we're viewers, we're not real people within the story, but as soon as they show them effects, you're like, well, it's clearly the Badlands. Like, I know there's no reason for the characters to know that at this stage, but it's not a surprise when they say that at the end. You're like, that's obvious.
I think Betazoid would have been more interesting. Betazoid.
I think this season needs more. It depends how they land it. We've got three left.
And
it's landable in 3 episodes, like, I think.
You've got, like, episodes like that have done, like, Whistle Speak that were
Yeah, we didn't need that.
Arguably awful, and you could have put a lot more stuff into them. So, does it need more episodes than 10? No. Did it need some of the episodes written better? Yes.
Yeah. I think you set it up for next week. We're going to get the last clue, which leaves us with two episodes to wrap it all up, which I think if it's written well enough, yeah, we can do it.
If we know that they did a lot when they found out it had been cut, they've done reshoots to put new bits into the end and all that. And I just hope that it works, that it doesn't seem disjointed, because that can happen sometimes.
I mean, my feeling is it's what I think all of us said at one time or another. It's not that it like needs more episodes, it just needs rejigging of how you've done things. Completely right. Get rid of some of the episodes and put in other ones which are more relevant.
And
some things where they've got like the whole series to deal with them, they just suddenly either bunch into one episode or have we're just going to mention this to remind you, but not enough to actually go into it. It's like, well, yeah, that's pointless. That's like, not doing what we've said we want.
Like Whistlespeak, what it did, you could have had Whistlespeak happening while you had something else really important happening. So almost became a B or a C side story.
Yeah, what they tried to do there.
It didn't need to be.
They tried to do a standalone episode within the context of an ongoing story, and it didn't work. Whereas this one is all the ongoing story, and it does work. So. Yeah.
And you take that time travel episode, that was good, but it could have been so great. They made so many missed opportunities. Like they did no callbacks to the previous episode. That should have been a celebration of the past of Discovery. And it just wasn't. It should have been as I say, it's the one time where Burnham doesn't get over emotional or anything. And it's when she sees her home planet, which she's now her version of her home planet. She is decades, centuries removed.
900 years. And you get millennium
from your time, from when your ship is launched, and you don't have any kind of
it was a weird one.
Discovery at times has some great moments, but as a series, it just misses on so many points. I don't know if it's because it was originally created by Brian Fuller, and instead of scrapping his ideas and completely going, no, we're going to go with this instead of what he's come up with, because this will be a better idea. They've tried to jig his ideas into what they've ran with, and then they've changed direction after two seasons. Let's do something different. From season three is still a good season. Season four was absolutely dire. Season five is a bit of a redemption from how it's gone, but season one and two are really strong. But they've got a new series heading with Michelle Paradise, and she's just gone in a completely different direction to where it started, and it's just jarring.
I mean, but in this series,
you're right,
she's doing like a lot better with something else. But like, take Telly's story, it's like, as I say, she seems to be learning by just being a good teacher, but why? Like, instead, you've got Rayner on there now, who's proved himself to be a good teacher. I think he's finding his niche as a teacher and as a kind of like person who grows people. That is his, what he's great at. Why not have him and Tilly having some scenes where she learns and then later on applies it? Then you see her growing into the person she needs to be ready for the Academy show. Whereas right now, it's just like conveniently, she's just getting better not being around her students, which is a bit weird. Like, why is she being better not around her students? That's a bit troubling,
Well, maybe they're going to write her out, and it's going to be Rainer who's going to take over.
Maybe we'll find out. I would love Rainer to be in
Academy, which I would not have a problem with.
Yeah, even if they reject it now that they know, because I think the idea probably was that he was going to get established in Discovery for later series of Discovery if they'd gone on.
Yeah.
Again, I feel like there's too many signs that they smelt the blood in the water at this stage, because there's too many things which feel last series, which reshoots would not handle all this kind of all these changes. But maybe they had it in their mind. It's like, well, if this doesn't work, he's a very good teacher, and we've got a teacher show coming up. He could be a character.
Yeah,
they're thinking that because he's just too good not to have a.
Because I'm not being funny, but I can't see Tilly carrying a show.
I could see it with some really good writing, but I think she would need some strong backup, like Animal Soul Daddy.
Yeah,
be there. I still want Budgie Clock Guy to come back. I just don't know why, but I love him. And I want.
We all want a Budgie Alarm Clock.
I think it seems
such a dude. He just stood there on the line, just standing. Like, you think you've got a horseshit job, like, out there, people. Like, you might have a job you hate. Do you just turn up every day, just on the off chance someone turns up for years? That's what that guy. That's why he's the dude. And that's why they need to bring him back.
The thing with Tilly is, back in season 3, I'd have said she could absolutely headline her own show, but I feel like over the last 2 seasons, she's just got watered down and to the point that there isn't much to her at all now.
No.
Anyway.
With that bloke that, sorry, just one last one. What's happening? Like, they set up that there's a bloke who fancy each other, but they're not quite saying it. And she's giggly around him. And I'm going, oh, well, I'll be interested. I wonder what's going to happen with that. Not mentioned.
No, not gone back to that yet.
If they're just literally setting it up for the Academy show, that's so lazy to do it.
Can we have... Like, we've got what is it? One more piece of the puzzle to find.
Yes, next week is the last clue.
That's so, time.
What do you think's going to happen when they get it all? I've got 2 separate theories on this.
Go on.
One, when Locke told Mal, he had an idea for how she could escape, but she wasn't going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was that he was going to OD.
All right, yeah.
And all that. And maybe she's
with the idea of her bringing him back.
That she's going to bring him back somehow. Or there's some secret royal family thing that if you freeze them hard enough, they'll regenerate.
Mm.
So that's why she had to go back with them. Or we've got Booker who's going to bring... turn traitor again and steal it just to bring his planet back.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
And it's got to look like he's a massive traitor again. He's stolen technology. We can never trust him again. And all it does is bring his planet back and then destroy it.
That's
too dangerous for anyone to have.
I can see that happening, actually. I think that would be not a bad ending, that he brings back Quajon and then turns himself in and destroys it.
That's too. This is too much power that no one should have this.
Yeah.
Let me also throw in, I'm going to freeze you so hard you regenerate, was also a line from the Doctor Who porn parody. Just
But I think there's more to Locke being dead and Mal wanting to go.
Yeah. Because we
never hear his plan. He goes, I've got a plan for you to get out, but you're not going to like it.
True.
But...
As it stands, it looks like he's relied too much on the Federation knowing Breen enough to save him. But I like the fact that that's hidden.
Yeah, because they say he's took way too much. And it's tricodrazine, which is what McCoy got high on in City on the Edge of Forever,
which I thought was a nice
little callback as well. And I do like what they do with Mal here, because she goes, right, I'm joining the Breen. And I was like, what? That makes no sense. But then they address it straight away and say, well, it's in the thing that it can bring. Yeah. And I was like, oh, good. Because I felt like they were just doing a twist for the sake of it. But then they do justify it. And I was like, I didn't give you enough credit there. I apologize.
And then you find out why these two are so close. Like, we've seen the evidence of that anyway. But they also married. They have gone
and that's
got
it. Married. And she knows she's safe because of that and how that works in Breen society. So, I thought that was all really well done.
Also, a prediction for next week.
Go on.
I reckon they're going to continue with the Deep Space Nine nods. I reckon next week you're going to see the Breen with a light ship, like, you know, the solar ship, which akin to what Sisko...
This is going to be a Primarch joke, isn't it?
No. I just think the Breen with the Primarch probably love a good sail.
There we go. Very good.
I'll be annoyed if we get no mention of Bajor.
Yeah, I would like to see them dock at Deep Space Nine on the way there or something. If DS9 is still there.
Will DS9 still exist or will it be a different station?
It's probably due an upgrade.
Been upgraded, yeah.
It was a bit rickety even back when we last saw it.
But let's face it, with other ships, you get like just a new ship, whereas that's in a stationary position, even if it's been rebuilt, rejigged, and everything else.
True.
You could just have a Deep Space Nine.
New parts keep added to it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be great.
You mean a bit like a Valerian... In Valerian, where it's just like bits keep getting added to it, so it
keep having maybe.
Yeah,
and yeah, David says she's going to hotwire a Breen dreadnought. She might. I wouldn't put it past her. And yeah, so we wrap up the episode. Then we've got the last clue. We're ahead. Oh, I'll tell you what we haven't talked about, which is actually a really good bit, is where they're talking about do we hand over Maul or not, and. I like the way they do take this logical approach to it that's like, right, well, she can't give them any information they haven't already got. We're ahead of her to the next clue. They're going to be looking to it anyway, and if we don't give them it, it'll cause a war. And like you say, Michael starting to be able to not see everything from as an emotional thing, that she's the one who goes along with it, and it's Book that says this isn't right. And I thought that was a really nice wrinkle to throw into the story as well.
Well, Book's still tied up that because she's the daughter of his mentor, that they should be close. But that's a very... in his head, because he's lost his planet, that's why he's looking for that.
Yeah.
But it is a very tenuous connection to somebody.
And it's not reciprocated at all by her so far. But... So go on, Squeak.
No, I'm just going to say maybe like as opposed to giving Book more, you do set up Tilly a bit better, ready for the kind of new series.
Yeah.
Be in, because then you get the Breen at the Tilly. The Primark.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So then it finishes. We go to Black Alert and she doesn't say the thing again.
Yes, she's
that's two
her.
Episodes this season that could have finished with her saying the thing and she doesn't say the thing.
It is enraged Willow. You can hear that.
And I don't blame her at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that wraps up this one. Really good. I thought it was a really strong episode. Feels like we're back on track, but then we had two good episodes. Then we got Whistle Speak. So who knows what we're going to get next week.
I think we've got three episodes. We know Jonathan Frakes. Is Jonathan Frakes just doing another final episode?
The penultimate one.
From the last adventures of Discovery.
Let's have a TNG flashback.
Oh, that'd be funny.
It's like that very short tricks where they kept them going.
Yeah.
Program.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week anyway to talk about the next episode. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us at RetrekPod. Where RetrekPod@gmail.com, or you can check us out on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
I finally got in touch with David, so he is getting...
Oh, is he getting it? Excellent.
Yeah, he's not being well. He finally got in touch with me yesterday. So that is going in the post this week for David, his Viper. And I am doing some more work. Don't know if this will work, but I'm busy building... sort of like to go inside the Doomsday machine at the moment.
And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as you might know, Jim, we've got an idea. We're resting the Dr. Squee show for the next six or seven weeks, I think it is, for the run of Doctor Who. So basically just to give me, if nothing else, a break from trying to arrange the interviews, we're instead going to have two different people joining me each week to break down the latest episodes of Doctor Who. So this week it is... Space Babies and the Devil's Chord. And I am joined by Jack Taylor, all our friend from the High Council of Geeks, where you will all find each of us. Please look it up on Facebook. Join now. It's a great community. And Jim joins me to bust out the episodes. And I was saying we'll have to do one with both of you guys on a like little recap.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. Yeah.
It's going to be a bit fun mixing up. And I just give a bit of a plug. So that goes out tomorrow, Thursday. And then we've already got guest lineup for the future weeks, including Anne Stevens from the Sci-Fi Weekender, some of them you might know her, author. And I've got loads of kind of really cool people, some which have been in some episodes of Doctor Who in different roles. So there'll be some really cool guest stars this season on Gallifrey Stands.
Brilliant. And we will be back next week to talk about the next episode. But in the meantime, let's fly.
Dragonfly!
Let's fly!
Let's dragonfly!
What me?